old relic. Melcher, Fritz said. I've brought the whole SRD in on it. Was this what Fritz and Max had been disappearing to work on all this time? Some plan to get rid of Herr Professor Dr. Major Melcher? Listen, Melcher's been a jerk lately, but he's been through a lot, I told him. His son died at Stalingrad. I saw the telegram. Everybody lost somebody at Stalingrad, Fritz said. Really? I said, suddenly angry. Did you? I knew he hadn't. Did you, Max? It's the ultimate honor to die for the Führer, Max said. More bleeding propaganda. It was all that ever came out of Max's mouth. Fritz nodded. The old man should be proud his son died for Hitler. Not go soft. He's a defeatist. Germany can't win with people like him around. I huffed. This was stupid. Melcher is a patriot. Herr Professor Dr. Major Melcher, remember? He fought for Germany in the Great War. The old Germany, Fritz said. He wouldn't be swayed. Is he in there? He asked. Yes, Quex, one of the boys said. Fritz's new nickname had caught on fast. Then let's go. Fritz charged inside. I didn't even have time to warn Herr Professor Dr. Major Melcher. He was sitting at his desk, his head in his hands, when the SRD blitzed in like the Third Army invading Poland. Seize him, Fritz ordered, and half a dozen boys jumped the old man. They pulled at his coat, his shirt, his tie, ripping his clothes and sending him crashing to the ground. Melcher cried out, but that only seemed to energize them more. They were like wild dogs, ripping and tearing at a piece of raw meat. They kicked him and punched him and tried to pull him apart by the arms and legs. Don't hurt him, I cried, but no one was listening to me. I felt the same urge to defend my teacher that I'd felt for Fritz all those weeks ago during the book burning. I tried to fight my way into the wolf pack, but there were too many of them, and it wasn't even all of them. The rest of the boys overturned desks, threw papers in the air, smashed the windows. The other students stood at the edges of the room and cheered them on. I backed away against the door jamb, horrified by the abrupt violence, the animal cruelty. There was nothing I could do, not by myself, but that didn't mean I couldn't call for help. I ran outside to a police box and called in an emergency. It was all I could do. The city police weren't the Gestapo. They could stop this madness. Arrest the boys for attacking Melcher and destroying the school. But only if they got here in time. If they didn't, the SRD boys were going to kill him. A wee iron coffin. Two police officers arrived by car just as the boys were dragging Herr Professor Dr. Major Melcher out of the school. I sagged with relief. I'd saved him. But when the police saw the attackers were SRD boys, they pulled up short. This man is a defeatist, Fritz announced to the police officers. We are taking him to the Gestapo. The police backed off and let the boys drag Melcher away down the street. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. The police were adults. Didn't they see what was happening here? Wasn't somebody going to make the children behave? Not today. The police were scared. You could see it in the looks they gave each other. Nervous glances that said, if we do or say anything, they'll come for us next. Idiots! Didn't anybody realize this was how Nazi Germany had gotten to be this way in the first place? I was about to say something, stand up to the SRD bullies, tell the police about Melcher's son, tell them how Fritz and the other boys were wrong. Break this spell of silence. But then I caught myself. If I said something, I might save Melcher's life, but I would ruin everything else Simon and my parents and I had worked for. All our plans to smuggle Simon out with the blueprints. Even if Fritz didn't get me kicked out of the SRD, he would never invite me inside his house ever again. I would never get the last page of the jet plans. Germany would win the war. Crush the Allies, conquer the world. And what would I have done besides save Herr Professor Dr. Major Melcher's life? Again, I saw myself 4 years ago, on the night of broken glass. But now I saw it through new eyes, the eyes of my parents. Saw the awful trade. One man's life against the fate of the entire world. My heart ached, as if it were slowly eating me up from inside. Sometimes we have to sacrifice good people to win a war, Simon had told me. Sometimes you do what you have to do, even if doing it means doing something wrong. Melcher's watery, desperate eyes found mine, and in that moment I knew. I knew that deep down he really hated the Nazis, and that he'd been faking his loyalty to them all this time. And that he knew I had been too. Melcher's eyes begged me to say something, to speak up for him, to save him. Instead, I said nothing. I locked my heart away in a wee iron coffin and swallowed the key. It burned going down, and tears stung my eyes, but still I said nothing. Herr Professor Dr. Major Melcher closed his eyes and wept, but he didn't give me away. He understood, because to his own shame, he'd been silent too. I followed the boys to Gestapo headquarters, where they dumped the broken, blubbering body of Herr Professor Dr. Major Melcher on the floor in front of the SS officer on duty.
This man has forsaken the Führer and is undermining our will to fight, Fritz told him.
How Fritz, the youngest and smallest of them, had become the de facto leader of the group, I didn't know.
A concentration camp is too good for him, Max cried. Put a rifle in his hands and send him to the Eastern Front, Fritz said. Maybe then he'll appreciate what he did to sabotage support for our soldiers while he was safe and warm in Berlin.
There was indignant nods of agreement all around. The SS officer called for men to come and take Herr Professor Dr. Major Melcher away.
We'll take care of him, the SS man said.
My heart banged against the door of the little box where I'd locked it away, but I didn't let it out. Nobody deserved what was about to happen to Melcher, but I couldn't stop it. Not if I wanted to get the jet plans. But I died inside a little, too.
You won't be needing a teacher any longer anyhow, the SS officer said, and suddenly he had everyone's attention. You won't have time for it. All Luftwaffe ground specialists have been redeployed to active fighting, which means more duties will fall to the Hitler Youth here at home. From now on, you boys will be manning the anti-aircraft guns during air raids.
One last time. We had our first training on the giant anti-aircraft guns that day, on a training field just outside the city. School was officially out for every boy old enough to fight. Forever. I should have been happy about that. It had to mean the Nazis were losing, desperate. Or I should have been excited, like the rest of the boys, to get to fire the enormous house-size gun. But all I could think about was the jet fighter plans in Fritz's house, and the clock ticking away the hours and minutes until Simon escaped from Berlin. I had to get into Fritz's house by the end of the day. I kept trying to catch Fritz, to casually mention getting together this afternoon at his house to read detective novels, but I never had the chance. He had a new group of friends now, and he didn't have time for me. When they loaded us up to take us back to the city at the end of the day, I couldn't even get on the same truck as Fritz. There wasn't any room around him. I lost Fritz in the kudelmoodle of boys climbing out of trucks. Had he gone straight to whatever the science team was? Or had that special team really been about Melcher? Was it over? Had Fritz gone home? I huffed, my breath spewing like a dragon as I sprinted the 10 blocks to his house. Lena answered the door, her big eyes staring at me.
Is Fritz home?
I said, panting from the run. Lena stared at me.
Lena, is Fritz home?
Lena shook her head. She started to shut the door, but I was done waiting around for Fritz. I didn't have time. I stuck my foot in the door.
Can I come in and wait for him?
I asked Lena. She was probably the only one home.
Lena stared at me for a few more seconds, then opened the door to me. Yes, I almost cried for joy. I was in. A quick glance at the blueprints one last time, and then I never had to come here again. Lena closed the door behind me, and I waited in the hall. Lena stood watching me.
You can go do whatever it was you were doing, I told her.
She kept staring at me like she always did.
Seriously, go, get,
I told her, as if she was some annoying puppy. At last, she turned and went upstairs. I shook my head as I stepped inside Fritz's father's study. Crazy girl, I thought, and then I suddenly pulled up short, my breath catching in my throat. All the blueprints were gone from the walls. Lucky Mushroom. No, 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 no. I was so close to being finished. I just needed a few more minutes with the last page of the blueprints. I spun in the office, hoping Fritz's father had just taken them down and they were still stacked up somewhere. But the place was as much of a coodle-moodle as Herr Professor Dr. Major Melcher's desk. I didn't see them anywhere. My heart burst out of that wee iron coffin and thumped against my chest as I clawed through the piles of paper around the room. Up until now, I'd been a Glückspilz, a weird German expression that meant lucky mushroom, which I guess is no weirder than saying I was a lucky duck, but it still sounded funny. I'd met the one kid in all of Berlin who could give me access to top-secret Nazi jet fighter plans, and he and I had become friends, helping each other pass our Hitler Youth tests and reading forbidden detective novels together, while day by day I snuck secret looks at the blueprints for Project 1065. But suddenly I'd gone from being a Glückspilz to a Pechvogel, a bad luck bird. I kept digging through the stacks of papers in Fritz's father's office, worried that any moment I was going to hear the front door open and Fritz or his father or his mother would catch me. Stop, I told myself. Calm down. What would Simon do? I suddenly remembered Kim's game. Fritz's father's office was one giant Kim's game, one I'd been looking at for weeks now. The key wasn't to dig through all the stacks of paper I'd seen there before. I needed to see what was different now, what was new. I turned around slowly, scanning every inch of the room. And that's when I saw it. A thick accordion folder tied up with string by the door, addressed to be mailed. I snatched it up and took it to Fritz's father's desk. I held my breath as I untied the string, opened it, lifted the flap, saw folded blue papers peeking back at me from inside. Yes, I almost jumped and yelled for joy. From lucky mushroom to bad luck bird and back again. I was tempted to run away with the packet, take the whole thing to Simon, and send him on his way with it. But that was greedy and foolish. I had already transcribed almost all the plans. Stealing the whole packet now was pointless, and would just let Fritz's father know that their plans had been compromised. I had to memorize the last page and put everything back exactly how I'd found it. I flipped through the blueprints, found the one I needed, and unfolded it on the desk. I was about to start memorizing the math on it when I got that weird feeling you get when you know someone's watching you. I looked up and saw Lena in the doorway staring right at me. Having babies for Hitler. My heart caught in my throat. I was busted. Glückspilz to Pechvogel to Glückspilz to Pechvogel. There was no telling how long Lena had been standing there staring at me, but long enough, I was sure, to have seen me open up one of her father's personal packages and pull out a blueprint. Should I grab the last page and run? Try to bluff my way out of it, leave, and hope she never told her parents or brother? But if Fritz's father was about to mail the plans away, this was my last chance to see them, and maybe the last chance the Allies had to intercept them before they were used to build a working jet fighter that would change the world forever. I didn't know what to do. I was as paralyzed as if I was standing on top of that ladder over the pool again.
You and I can get married, Lena said.
My mouth hung open. On the list of things I thought Lena might say to me in that moment, "You and I can get married" was right below, "I'm an alien from outer space." I was 13 years old. She was 10 years old. Why in the world would either of us be thinking about getting married?
Okay, I said. At first, I thought you might not be Aryan, and then we couldn't get married, Lena said.
It was more words than she had spoken to me in the entire month I'd known her.
But I asked at the BDM meeting. English is Aryan too. Not as good as Nordic, but okay.
I'm Irish, I told her. She nodded as though there wasn't any difference.
After I graduate from the BDM and you graduate from the Hitler Youth, we can get married and have lots of babies for Hitler.
Whoa, 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 I told her. I wasn't having lots of babies with anybody or for anybody, especially not Hitler. This girl had our whole future planned out and we'd barely had a single conversation. I was about to argue with her, but I realized it didn't really matter. All that mattered was getting out of here with the plans.
Listen, it sounds like you've got it all figured out, I told her. But like you said, we can't do anything until we graduate from the Hitler Youth and the Bund Deutscher Mädel. And then I'll be in the army and you'll be in the Nazi Women's League or working in a factory somewhere.
We can get married in between, Lena said. Then I can send cigarettes and treats to you at the front lines, and you can write me letters back telling me how much you miss me.
I gawked at her. She really had thought this all out.
Right. Okay. Good plan, I said.
I had to get this over with.
So we'll just wait until we graduate, and then we'll get married and start having lots of babies for Hitler.
Okay,
she said, and she turned and left the room. I slumped down onto the desk, my face turning red with embarrassment. Lena had been weird all this time because she had a crush on me. This was the last thing I needed to deal with right now. But maybe it was just what I needed. As long as Lena thought we were getting married, she wouldn't be telling on me to her family. I memorized the last page, put the plans back where I'd found them, and hurried out of the house. I wanted to get out of there before Lena came back to tell me where we'd be going on our honeymoon. The game. I didn't tell Simon about my conversation with Lena. We wouldn't have gotten any work done. He'd be laughing so hard. Instead, we spent what time he had left drawing up the last page of the jet fighter plans from my memory. And then we were done. There was no more reason for Simon to stay.
This is a swell piece of work, Michael, Simon told me,
apparently not feeling any of the ache I was feeling at his imminent departure. He bundled up the pages we had worked on together and tied a leather string around them.
It's an incredible coup.
I came to take pictures, and I'll be going back with full-blown schematics. They'll be waiting to pin a medal on you when you get back to England.
Sad as I was, I liked the thought of that. Michael O'Shaughnessy, decorated Irish spy. My mother and father joined us.
I've set the staff to clean in the silverware, Ma whispered, locking the door to Da's study behind her. That should keep them busy for a time.
They have to be suspicious of all our locked-door family meetings, Da said.
It'll all be over tonight, Ma said. It's all arranged, she told Simon.
She spread a map out on Da's desk.
When the nightly air raid comes, and it will as sure as eggs is eggs, you'll wait until 3:45 in the morning and then make your way to this alleyway here, where Michael will meet you. I will? I asked.
It was the first I'd heard of it. Ma nodded.
Your Da and I can't leave the air raid shelter, or there'd be questions. You know every inch of this city, Michael, and Simon doesn't. Not only that, your SRD uniform will make most people look the other way. Since you'll already be out and about on your patrols, it shouldn't be any problem for you to lead him through the city to his next contact. But I won't be on patrol tonight, I told them. The SRD will be manning the anti-aircraft guns.
It was as if I'd dropped a bomb all my own in my father's study. Ma's mouth opened, but nothing came out. Da's face went ashy white.
Good Lord, Michael, Simon whispered. You can't be serious. That's a death sentence, and you're 13-year-old boys.
I didn't know what to say. I didn't have any choice in the matter. None of us did.
Do you think you can still get away? Ma finally asked. It wouldn't be for all night. Just long enough to get Simon to Friedrichstrasse. I think so.
Sure. Yes, I said. It made sense that Simon's escape would take place during an air raid. Almost everybody else would be hiding underground or have other things to worry about.
I'm sorry, but are we just going to gloss over the fact that Michael is now a target for Allied bombers?
Da asked, looking upset.
We can't worry about that right now, Ma said.
Can't worry about that right now, Da said. Our son might as well be on the front lines fighting for Hitler. It's become too dangerous here for him and for us. Someone else without a family can take my place as ambassador.
I started to protest that I could handle it, but Da cut me off with a stern shake of his head.
No, it's time for us to go back to Dublin.
We have to get Simon out of Berlin first, Ma said,
ending the argument for the moment. She pointed to the map.
Michael, you'll take him here, to this corner on Friedrichstrasse. That's where you'll hand Simon off to one of my agents. You're to tell the agent, this air raid sounds like the finale to a Wagner opera, to which he will respond, I prefer Beethoven's symphonies myself. That's how you'll know he's our man. If he doesn't give you the correct passphrase, move on.
I nodded, practicing the words in my head.
Where will he take Simon?
I asked.
It's best you not know that, Ma said. The man you're to meet will be the first of my network to ferry him out of the country, but by no means the last. Just do your part, and the network will see to the rest. God willing, Simon will be back in London by St. Patrick's Day.
Where I'll raise a pint of Guinness and sing the Irish national anthem in your honor, Simon told us with a wry smile. Now, where are you on this assassination business? Any clue to who they're targeting?
We're narrowing it down to a list of targets. An American businessman visiting Portugal, a French resistance fighter in Algiers, a member of the Danish monarchy, Ma said. But it's all speculation at this point. We haven't got a solid shred of evidence one way or another. But Davin and I will deal with that.
She nodded at my father and then looked back at Simon.
The first order of business is getting you out of here.
And then, Da said firmly, we will talk about how we get ourselves out of here.
X marks the spot. Air raid sirens screamed. Berliners ran for bomb shelters. Giant searchlights clicked on, buzzing as they warmed up. From high in the cloudy night sky, we could hear the low, steady, ominous drone of British airplanes growing closer. And I, along with my SRD troops, stood right in the middle of the street, waiting to shoot them down with an anti-aircraft gun. The anti-aircraft guns weren't just guns. They were cannons. The barrel of the gun was a long, thin, shiny, silver proboscis like a mosquito's nose, sticking out of a stocky jumble of gray hydraulic pistons and levers and gears that could swivel the cannon in any direction and any elevation. The giant mosquito stood on four thin legs that stretched out like an X on the ground beneath it, a perfect target for the bombers overhead. X marks the spot. And if the X wasn't enough, the bombers could target the giant searchlights not 3 meters from each anti-aircraft emplacement. We were just begging to be bombed. The other boys didn't see it that way. Or if they did, they hit it well. Excitement passed through our little group of a dozen boys like static electricity. They were going to be firing real guns in a real war situation. At last, no more childish assignments checking IDs or raiding pool halls or tattling on unenthusiastic Hitler youth. We were going to be doing real fighting. The thooms of exploding British bombs began, and we heard the pock, pock, pock of the AA guns beginning to fire on the far side of the city. Our searchlight swept the sky. Black dots of death rained down, and white streaks of death shot up. The once-a-night aerial fistfight between Great Britain and Nazi Germany. I was one of the boys assigned to run the artillery shells from the storage crate to the gun. Ours was one of the 88s, the cannons that shot enormous 88mm shells that looked like bullets made for a giant's rifle. The shells were 2 feet long and weighed more than 20 pounds each. The other boys and I had to constantly run back and forth, each of us carrying one in our arms, and hand them off to the boys who fed them into the metal insect's butt. More boys ran the radar machine that helped find the planes in the cloudy skies, and others worked the controls to aim the gun and fire. Fritz and Max were on the team that fired. The booming orange eruptions of flame grew near. A building a few blocks from us exploded, scattering brick and rubble into the street like a farmer casting seeds. We flinched, and I felt a little of the electric excitement fade away, replaced by fear. But then Fritz was screaming, "Fire!" And our AA gun recoiled with the force of a colossal jackhammer, cracking the pavement as it sent its first shell hurtling into the sky. We all stood and watched, even though we'd been trained to reload and fire, reload and fire. In what seemed like slow motion, the tracer round arced high into the clouds and detonated with a distant boom between the hundreds of bomber planes flying by. We hadn't hit a thing. "Reload! Reload!" Fritz cried, and we fell back onto the routine we'd been trained for. Grab a shell from the crate, haul it to the gun, load it, aim it, shoot it. Grab a shell from the crate, haul it to the gun, load it, aim it, shoot it. The routine had been easy to follow in the training session in broad daylight, with no planes droning overhead, no bombs whistling as they fell on you. A building across the street detonated suddenly, showering us with wooden splinters and bits of masonry. I ducked and put a hand to my helmet to keep it in place as a piece of metal shrapnel pinged off it. The explosion was so loud my ears rang, and I saw instead of heard Fritz calling for another round. All about us the air was filled with dark black smoke that smelled like gunpowder and ash. I glanced at my watch. 3:15. I had to keep an eye on the time. I had to be at the rendezvous at exactly 3:45 to take Simon across the city to the next agent in Ma's network. I hefted another cartridge and turned to take it to the gun when the other boys erupted in a cheer. I blinked and looked up at the strobing night sky. A bomber plummeted from the clouds, trailing fire and smoke. We had actually shot down a British airplane. Time to kill. I felt sick. I slumped against the radar machine that searched the skies for targets. We had shot down a British airplane. I had shot down a British airplane. Maybe not all by myself, but I had helped. Was the artillery shell that hit the bomber one of the ones I had hauled over? Simon had been shot down just like this by an anti-aircraft emplacement outside Berlin, and now I had done the same thing to someone else. I didn't know how many RAF officers were on that bomber. Were they already dead, or were they parachuting into enemy territory? Whichever it was, I'd killed them, whether it was now or later. I joked with Simon that I had a deal with Allied bombers. I didn't shoot at them, and they didn't shoot at me. But now I had shot at them. It had always been a kind of joke, but deep down I'd really believed it, that no British bomb would ever kill me. Now all deals were off. Another bomb hit the same building across the street, cratering the lot and knocking us all off our feet. I hauled myself up on the radar machine and found myself staring at a panel of knobs and readouts for calibrating the thing. I did the German look to make sure I was alone, then twisted every dial I could way out of position. If we hit anything now, it would be by complete and utter accident. The AA gun kept up a steady pace. Boom, 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 boom. At optimum speed, we were supposed to be getting off 15 to 20 rounds per minute, but because it was our first night, and because we were all 13 to 17 years old, it was probably more like 5 to 7 rounds per minute. But that was still too many shots at British bombers for my taste. I snuck another peek at my watch. 3:27. I still had time to kill, which I suddenly realized was a very bad way of putting it.
"You're missing everything," one of the boys told Fritz,
and I smiled to myself. My sabotage had worked. I would have to be sure to always do that before the planes came. One of the older SRD boys, I think his name was Otmar, laughed.
"Come on, Quex. How do you expect to kill that scientist if you can't even shoot down a plane?"
One of Otmar's buddies, Erhardt, I think, though I was always getting the two boys confused, laughed and punched Otmar in the shoulder. I fumbled the handoff of my next artillery shell. Kill a scientist? What were they talking about? Fritz did the German look. He caught me gaping at them and shot Otmar, Erhardt, an angry frown, as if to say, "See? Be quiet. People are listening." They went back to work, and I slipped around to the other side of the AA gun to think. Was that what Fritz and Max and I guessed Erhardt and Otmar had been pulled away to do? Was that what the science team meant? That they were training to, what, assassinate some scientist somewhere? And then a deeper thought struck me with all the force of an Allied bomb. Fritz and Max and Otmar and Erhardt were the assassins my parents were looking for, and an Allied scientist was their target. I was lost in thought when Max appeared in front of me.
"I know why we're not hitting anything," he snarled. "Because you sabotaged the radar machine."
Head cinema. I put my hands up.
"No, wait," I told Max. "I didn't do anything."
Max took a step toward me and I took two steps back.
"I saw you," he said. "You twisted the knobs. You did it on purpose."
I did the German look, hoping nobody else had heard him. Max and I were on the other side of the AA gun, the thundering, booming AA gun, and nobody else was around. But any minute, Max was going to tell the others. Unless I went on the offensive. I lunged for Max, grabbing his right arm and twisting it behind his back. He cried out in pain, then started to holler for help. I wrenched his arm up higher.
"Don't," I said, "or I'll break it."
Max writhed in my grip.
"You'll never get away with this," he said.
He was probably right, but I didn't see any other way out.
"Who's the scientist you're supposed to kill?" I asked.
Max went still, and I felt lightheaded. So I'd been right. Fritz and Max and Otmar and Erhardt had been training to kill an Allied scientist.
"I don't know what you're talking about," Max said.
I twisted his arm.
"Tell me."
Max cried out. I glanced around, but we were still alone, the big AA gun shielding us from being heard or seen, for now.
"Okay, okay. It's some Jewish scientist," Max spat out.
"Who?" I said, wrenching his arm again.
"Goldschmidt, Heinrich Goldschmidt."
"When?
Where?" "At some science conference somewhere. I don't know. They haven't told us where or when, I swear." "Why you? Why Fritz or Erhardt or Otma?" I don't know," Max said. "Maybe because I can speak English."
I was surprised.
"You speak English?"
Max swore at me in the King's English, and I had to admit he was pretty good at it. My mind reeled. I had to tell my parents a man named Hendrik Goldsmith was the target as soon as I could. But I had to meet Simon first, help him get out of Berlin. What time was it? And what was I going to do about Max? Max took advantage of my reverie. He slammed the heel of his boot down on my toe, making me jump back. He twisted himself around and slipped free, clutching at his injured arm as he staggered back from me. I could run now, get away while the others had to stay at their post, but then Max would rat me out and my whole career as a spy would be over. I could never come back. I'd have to leave Germany with Simon, if that was even possible. And what about my parents? How would they get out of Berlin? Would they be captured? Killed? Worse? The Germans have a great word for seeing everything that can go wrong play out in your head. They call it Kopfkino, head cinema. And what I saw playing out on the movie screen in my head was the end of everything. I yanked my Hitler Youth dagger from its sheath. Max's eyes went wide, as if he couldn't believe I might really be an enemy agent, even though he'd caught me sabotaging the gun. He fumbled at the snap on his dagger's sheath. I should have jumped him then, but I hesitated. Could I really do this? Could I really kill another person in cold blood? Max drew his dagger, took a step toward me, and then Max exploded. A huge piece of shrapnel, the shredded tip of a destroyed British bomber's wing, we later found out, fell out of the sky and ripped Max in two like he was made of paper. But Max wasn't made of paper. He was made of flesh and blood and bone that exploded all over me and knocked me to the ground. One second he was there, snarling at me, and the next second he was just gone. The horror of what I'd seen, what I would never, ever be able to unsee, made me vomit and collapse to my knees. The stink of blood and guts and vomit filled my head, and I thought I was going to pass out. I was shaking so badly I almost couldn't move, but I had to get as far away from the carnage as I could. I dragged myself around to the other side of the gun, where the other boys were still working. Fritz saw me covered with blood and ran to me. I pointed to the other side of the AA gun, and some of the boys went to look. They came back crying and pale, and more than one of them bent over the AA gun's spidery legs to retch. I shook with both horror and guilt. I had wanted to keep Max from telling on me for sabotaging the AA gun, for pumping him for information about the science team, and now he was dead. It was hard not to think I'd caused it somehow, that my wishing him quiet had killed him. Dully, I remembered that I was supposed to be somewhere else. I wiped Max's blood from the glass on my wristwatch. 3:40. It would take me longer than 5 minutes to get to my rendezvous with Simon. I was going to be late. I turned to go. And that was when the Edelweiss pirates attacked. Pirates of the Edelweiss. The Edelweiss pirates came streaming out of a nearby alley, screaming, "Eternal war with the Hitler Youth!" The AA gun team was still reeling from Max's death, and we were slow to understand what was going on. The Edelweiss pirates were on us before we could think, attacking with clubs and broken bottles and daggers. The SRD had been conducting more and more raids on the cinemas and pool halls and pubs where the Edelweiss pirates hung out all day, and this was their payback, attacking us when we least expected it, when the numbers were in their favor.
"Sorry if it hurts, mates. Sorry if we can't stay," they sang. "We're Edelweiss pirates, and we're on our way. We march by banks of Ruhr and Rhine, and smash the Hitler Youth in twain. Our song is freedom, love, and life. We're pirates of the Edelweiss."
A boy hit me in the back with a table leg, and I crumpled to the ground. It was the wake-up call I needed. My shock over Max's death washed away like blood under peroxide, replaced by the adrenaline rush of a fistfight. The pirate came at me again, and I swept out a leg, knocking him to the ground. I threw myself on top of him before he could get up again, pinning the hand that held the table leg to the ground. He looked up at me in abject horror, probably because I was covered in Max's blood and guts. I used his momentary shock to crack a fist across his face, and he passed out. As I climbed up off him, I was surprised to realize I recognized him. He was the boy who'd run off crying when he was kicked out of the Hitler Youth trials because of his asthma. All around me, the AA gun team was swarmed by Edelweiss pirates. Like me, the rest of the Hitler Youth boys had started slow and wobbly, but just as quickly their weakness had been knocked out of them. They were fighting back in earnest now, many of them with their Hitler Youth daggers in hand. I snatched mine up from where I dropped it and checked my watch. 3:46. I was officially late, and I hadn't even left yet. Simon would be standing in the shadows of the alley, hoping not to be caught by a passing air raid patrol while he waited for me. I had to get to him. I threaded my way through the melee, stopped to defend myself against a boy with a broken bottle. I had just driven him off when I saw Fritz surrounded by three Edelweiss pirates. Two of them had clubs, and the other had a knife. Fritz was doing everything I'd taught him to do in a fight. Right stance, right balance, right defensive position. But not even I could fend off three boys like that, especially if they were all a head taller than me, as they were to little Three Cheeses tall Fritz. If somebody didn't help him, he was going to get really hurt, maybe even killed. I glanced at my watch again and back at Fritz. Fritz, who hadn't talked to me in days. Fritz, who threw himself into pool halls looking for fights. Fritz, who was part of a secret mission to kill a Jewish scientist. Fritz, who had saved my life. I cursed in German, then in English, and threw myself at the boy with the knife. I drove him headfirst into the paved street, and he howled. Fritz had already gone after one of the other two, ducking a swing from the boy's club and jabbing at his leg with his dagger. I ran at the remaining boy from the side, knocking him to the ground. He swung his club at me, and it glanced off the side of my head. My temple exploded with pain. I put a hand to the throbbing, tender lump on my head and rolled away. The pirate twisted and raised his club to hit me again, but he screamed and jolted as if someone had just stuck a cattle prod in his back. It was Fritz. He kicked the boy in the back again, and the pirate dropped his club and writhed in pain. Fritz reached down and helped me up. He didn't look as wild or bloodthirsty as he had when he'd led the pool hall raid or the attack on Herr Professor Dr. Major Melcher. He looked cold, hard. The exploding bombs, the AA gun, the evisceration of Max, the ambush by the Edelweiss pirates. This was war. We weren't playing games anymore, and we both knew it. Thanks, I told him. You too, he said. Fritz ran to help another Hitler Youth beset by Edelweiss pirates, and I looked at my watch. 4:02. I was very, very late now. I ran. Gone. It took me only 10 minutes to run what would usually have taken me 15, even dodging all the fires and craters and piles of rubble in the streets. But it didn't matter. When I got to the rendezvous point, Simon was already gone. Operation Paperclip. I sat with my mother and father in Da's office, waiting for word that Simon had somehow reached the next rendezvous point outside Berlin. He hadn't come back to the embassy last night, which meant he'd tried to make it on his own. Or he'd been captured. The morning sun was just breaking through the smog of dust and smoke that hung over the city. I hadn't slept since I'd come home from the air raid. I'd been too worried about Simon, too guilt-stricken over missing my appointment. Da and Ma had understood, had told me it wasn't my fault, that they had expected too much of me. but that only made it worse. I wanted to be able to handle whatever they asked me to do, and more. I wanted to be better than everybody thought I was. I wanted them to think of me as an adult, not a kid who couldn't cut it.
Henrik Goldschmidt, Henrik Goldschmidt,
Ma said, pacing the floor. She was as worried as I was that Simon had been captured, but she had turned her nervous energy to the problem of the lead I'd brought home. The one thing I'd done right all night.
Goldschmidt's a physicist, Dutch. Got out of the Netherlands right before Hitler invaded. He works for the Americans now, under atomic bomb project.
What's an atomic bomb? I asked. Ma shook her head.
Some kind of super bomb. I've only heard rumors. It may not even be possible, but if it is, it'll change everything. Even more than that jet fighter.
I shrank farther into my chair at the mention of the jet fighter plans, which might be in the hands of the Nazis right now, along with Simon.
The real question, said Ma, is how in the world did the Nazis think they can assassinate Goldschmidt when he's in some secret military laboratory in the States?
Here, I knew I'd read his name recently, Da said.
He'd been combing through old issues of the Nazi newspapers he'd saved and had finally found the article he'd been looking for.
There's a science conference in the Swiss Alps in 2 days' time, and Goldschmidt's supposed to be there.
Ma grabbed up the newspaper and read the article.
But why would an Allied scientist come to Switzerland in the middle of the war? I asked.
Exchange of ideas, progress of science, Da suggested.
Operation Paperclip, Ma said under her breath.
Operation what? I said.
Paperclip. A secret Allied operation to recruit, or kidnap if necessary, Nazi scientists. He must be coming here to recruit someone at a conference.
He should be perfectly safe, Da said. The Germans would never strike inside Switzerland's borders. It would violate their neutrality.
Ma snorted.
The Nazis don't care a fig for neutrality. Just ask Denmark. The only reason the Nazis don't attack Switzerland is because tanks don't go up mountains.
Switzerland had declared its neutrality right at the start of the war, just like Spain and Sweden, and Ireland. But tiny Switzerland was right on Germany's southern border, wedged in between occupied France and fascist Italy. Germany had left Switzerland alone for now, going around the Alps instead of through them. They probably figured Switzerland would just give in when Germany took over the rest of the world.
In any event, Ma said, the Swiss aren't about to let any German soldiers in.
Which is why the Nazis are sending children, Da said with disgust.
The science team, I said. It's brilliant, Ma said. The Swiss will let them right in, and then they can assassinate Goldschmidt. We have to get word to British intelligence, I said. The conference is in 2 days, Ma said. We can't possibly get a message out in time. By the time London gets our diplomatic packet, Goldschmidt will already be at the conference, and it will take even longer to get word to him or anybody else who can help.
Best I could do is call up London and just tell them, Da said. But you know as well as I do that the phones are bugged. The Gestapo would be on us before we could make it out the front door.
But we can't just let them kill him, I said.
After being the one to discover who the Nazis were planning to assassinate, I didn't want what I'd learned from Max to mean nothing after all. The phone rang, and I jumped. It had to be someone calling about Simon. The missing wine. Da snatched the phone receiver up and listened.
Yes, she's right here, he said, and handed the phone to my mother.
Yes, she said in German. I see. Yes, it's all right. You can deliver the wine another time, then. Yes, thanks.
She set the receiver down and took a deep breath.
Simon didn't make the riverboat that was to take him to Oranienburg, Ma said, decoding her conversation for us. He must have been captured.
Simon's ship had literally sailed without him. My stomach folded in on itself, and tears sprang to my eyes. I couldn't help it. It wasn't just because I liked Simon, thought of him like a brother. It was because it was my fault he'd been captured. If the shrapnel hadn't hit Max, if the Edelweiss pirates hadn't attacked, if I hadn't stopped to help Fritz. I replayed the whole night in my head, trying to make it come out differently each time. But every time, it was the same. Every time I ended up in that alleyway alone, hands on my knees, tears in my eyes, blood on my hands. Ma put a hand on my shoulder. I was about to fall into her arms, cry into her shoulder the way I had when I was a little boy, and fell and scraped my knee. But before she could put her arms around me, the air raid sirens howled again. It was the Americans' turn to bomb us. I stood wearily from my chair and dragged a blood-stained sleeve across my eyes. I had an AA gun to man.
"No, Michael," Da said. "You can't go out again. Not after last night. You need rest, a bath, bed."
"I have to," I told him. "They'll notice if I'm gone. They'll report me."
"Then let them report you. We should never have brought him here with us," Da told Ma. "He's too young. The war's been too hard on him. We should have left him in Ireland."
"No," I said. "No, I can do this. I just messed up last night. I'm sorry. I have to go." I staggered out the back door, mostly so I wouldn't have to leave with my parents and the staff through the front door and let them see me cry. I wanted to be here in Berlin, working as a spy, helping the Allies. If I'd stayed back home in Ireland, I would just be in school, maybe helping collect rubber and paper and metal for the war effort. I wouldn't be helping the Allies bomb factories or steal secret jet fighter plans. But now they weren't going to get the plans. The blueprints for Project 1065 had been lost with Simon. Unless I could reconstruct them, redraw them from memory. Words and numbers and images flashed by in my head. Could I do it? Could I remember all of it? I didn't know if I could without Simon. A dark figure lunged at me from the shadows in the alley behind the embassy. I started to cry out, but the man slapped a hand over my mouth. I looked up at him, and my eyes went wide. It was Simon. Einbahnstraße. Simon looked shrunken and pale. He bent over double at the waist, a hand wrapped around his stomach like he'd eaten a bad bratwurst. I immediately turned him toward the back door and helped him climb the stairs. The staff had already cleared out because of the air raid. That's why Simon had waited until then to come back to the house. I led him to the little hidden closet at the back of Da's office, signaled for him to wait, as if he could go anywhere, and ran to catch my parents before they went down into the bunker. I was so giddy, I was practically hopping. I couldn't believe it. Simon was alive. I hadn't gotten him captured by the Gestapo after all. "Da! Ma!" I cried. The staff was with them, and everybody stopped to find out what was wrong. I panted from my run, trying to think how to tell them Simon was back without alerting the staff.
That wine you were trying to have delivered?" I said, remembering the coded conversation Ma had had with her contact on the phone. "It's made it, after all. They left it at the back door."
Da and Ma shared a startled look.
"I'll see to it," said Mrs. Keller, the housekeeper.
"No, no," Da said. "No, I forbid any of the staff to risk their lives over a case of wine, no matter how expensive it is. Get to the bunkers. Michael and I'll see to it."
Mrs. Keller and the others protested, but Da sent them away. Ma gave us a hopeful look before going with the staff to make sure none of them came back. Da and I rushed back to the secret closet where Simon lay slumped against the bookcases.
"Good God, are we happy to see you?" Da said. "What happened?"
Simon told us how he'd waited at the rendezvous point for me past our meeting time, and my ears burned hot with shame. I started to apologize, but Simon held up a hand.
"I heard a patrol coming, so I decided to try to make it on my own. I'd studied the maps. I thought I could do it,
I made it halfway across the city, but at some point I must have made a wrong turn. I was supposed to be on Friedrichstrasse, but instead I somehow ended up on Einbahnstrasse. I doubled back trying to find Friedrichstrasse, and that's when they spotted me.
Da and I glanced at each other, and I wondered which of us was going to be the first to tell him.
What? Simon asked.
That probably was Friedrichstrasse, Da told him.
No, I'm telling you, the sign said Einbahnstrasse.
Einbahnstrasse means one-way street, I explained. That was Friedrichstrasse. You just saw the sign that said it was one way, not the sign with the street name on it.
Simon closed his eyes and thunked his head back against the bookshelves.
Well, I suppose I should have learned a little more German while I was holed up here, shouldn't I?
Simon told us a Hitler Youth Patrol had spotted him, and when he didn't heed their calls, they chased him through the streets.
Almost lost them, he said. But one of the boys stayed on my tail, cornered me in an alley. He couldn't have been more than 10 years old. I had my pistol, but I'm afraid I didn't have it in me to shoot him. He was just a boy. He didn't have any similar reservations about using his dagger on me, though.
Simon pulled his hand away from his stomach. His shirt and hand were covered with blood.
Good God, why didn't you say something?
Da said, and he went for the alcohol and bandages.
What about the plans? I asked Simon.
He pulled them out from inside his shirt.
A little bloody, but still intact, I think, he said.
I sighed with relief. Simon was alive, and the plans were safe. His ship may have sailed, but Ma could arrange another one in time. Da came back with the medical kit. Bombs began to fall outside, shaking the books on the shelves.
Ah, Simon said as Da bandaged him. They're playing my song.
I have to get to the bunker, or someone from the staff will come looking for me, Da said.
I'll be fine with Michael, Simon replied. I can talk him through patching me up.
We're glad you're still alive, Da said, shaking Simon's hand.
So am I, as it happens, said Simon.
Da left, and Simon peeled back his torn and bloody shirt. I paled.
Simon, I'm so sorry, I told him.
Tears sprang to my eyes. I should have been there. I shouldn't have. Simon put up a hand.
I've never once been part of a covert action that went according to plan, he said.
He waved his hand to encompass himself and the little closet he was hidden in.
Case in point, how I got here in the first place. I'm sure you would have been there if you could.
Simon showed me how to clean his wound, which he bore with gritted teeth.
We figured out who's going to be assassinated, I said, to distract him.
I told him all about Goldschmidt and the science conference, Fritz and the so-called science team.
It's your little friend who's going to be doing the assassinating? Simon said.
I nodded.
And there's no time to get word back to London. The conference is in 2 days.
Which means you've got to get on that science team, Simon said. You have to go to Switzerland and stop it yourself.
An opening on the team. I froze.
What? Me? Join the science team? But how?
You said this boy Max, he was part of the team, but he was killed.
I felt the blood drain out of my head and my skin crawl as I saw it again. The shrapnel falling, slicing into Max, the blood, the guts.
Yes, I said quietly. He was killed.
So there's an opening on the team, Simon said.
Yes, yes, Simon was right. With Max dead, they would be looking to replace him on the team.
That's true, I told Simon, breathless.
And Max said he was on the team because he could speak English.
Which you do almost as well as an Englishman, Simon said, poking a little fun to disguise his discomfort.
I nodded. I could do this. I could join the science team with Fritz. And I didn't know how yet, but I could stop whatever it was they were planning. I had to.
No matter what Simon said, it was my fault he hadn't made it out of Berlin. My fault he'd been stabbed by a Hitler youth boy on patrol. My fault he was cooped up again in the secret closet in my father's study. I was going to prove that he and my parents could trust me the next time they needed me. I just had to get onto that team.